G'day guys and girls, it's Sammy Gordon here for another episode of the Scouting Australia podcast powered by Australian Property Scout Buyers Agency. I'm your host, Sammy Gordon, joined by my co-host, Jimmy Ibrahim. How are you, buddy?
I'm very well.
It's good, mate.
Happy Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Hope everyone had a great Christmas. Plenty of celebrations. You feeling fresh?
Mate, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling fresh. I've got to go with a quick shout out, mate. We need everyone to keep sending in the reviews. They're coming in thick and fast. They're looking good.
Absolutely. All
5 stars.
Absolutely.
Good commentary as well. I bloody love it. It's good.
Now, we do appreciate everyone's comments and reviews. And obviously, reviews are very important for any podcast. So if you're enjoying it, make sure you do give us a bit of a shout out and keep writing in. And
Jimmy, he knows his job's on the line, guys. So if you're enjoying him, let us know.
Please.
If you're not, just send a couple of axes in. I'll know exactly what it's for.
Now,
speaking of reviews.
Well, just a little bone to pick.
Okay.
Because I did notice our producer pulled me aside and said, look, I don't want to show Sammy this one. But at the end of our last episode.
Yes, mate.
I did say I had a present for you and you cut me off straight. Similar to when you used to play football, cut me at the knees. Red card for you.
Yes.
And I thought just for our...
You want me to leave? I'll leave you today by yourself?
No, just our audience.
Okay.
I just wanted to make sure that everyone knew exactly what we got you for the team.
Okay. What do we got?
Now, for those that... He's not going to put it on because...
obviously, it's a podcast.
It's a family show. but for those of you that are watching on YouTube, this was the T-shirt that Sammy Gordon was presented by the team at Australian Property Scout. None other than... The Wise Wednesday t-shirt.
Oh, wow. Look at that. The Wise Wednesday's hot tip of the week. That's very good, guys. You want to check that out, jump on the YouTube. There might be a Wise Wednesday. I might be wearing that at some point.
Mate, you have to wear that. You have to wear that.
Hats off to Big Cody for Secret Santa and delivering one. That was a good one, mate. Well done.
That's right. So that is going to be a common theme on the Wise Wednesday videos.
Okay.
However.
Maybe one. Yes.
We are at the end of the year, mate. The days are ticking. 2022. Almost done.
Almost done. Very close.
So we thought. With our producer, that it would be a good little wrap up.
Mm.
You know, we've given a bit of value in the previous episodes. It's been a big year. We want to try and keep our podcast today nice and sharp for our listeners.
Yep,
out there.
Sharp and snappy.
If Sammy doesn't talk too much, we might be out by 30 minutes, but we're going to keep it nice and tight because everyone's.
You've got the red light already going. You're already talking too long, mate. You learn your place.
It's the Boxing Day test, and you love cricket. So.
Do I?
Let's get into it. We're going to do a bit of a...
Great contact sport, that one. No, seriously.
A bit of a review of the year, I believe.
Yes, mate. Yeah. Well, you're the one that wanted to do it, so let's go, man.
Well, I thought it'd be good just to give our listeners just a bit of an overview of, obviously, just a bit of a quick recap.
It's been a big year. There's been some massive changes this year as opposed to, you know, you look at the... Last year was all guns blazing. It was a pretty crazy year for property. Most people did quite well out of it. Obviously, the year before that in 2020 was when COVID was in full flight. She was pretty gnarly there for the first 6 months and then everything kind of kicked off in the second half. But this year's been very different. You know, started strong and then the RBA got involved and wanted to, speaking of cricket, come out swinging with the bat and have a bit of crack at the public and at the Australian people to rein in spending, rein in mortgage, rein in inflation.
Correct. Necessary.
Up 300 basis points.
310.
Yeah, consecutive, right? No, 300. We're at 310 total. Yeah, 3.1.
Right,
get your facts. That's why you're the.
That's why I'm the
Gabba talking.
The good looking one.
Speaking of cricket again, the Gabba talking, gabbering away over there. Can you do the Gabba, the dance?
What is the Gabba?
Oh, you're showing your age, you elderly gentleman.
How many dances do you have? You've got the worm.
I can't do
you've
it.
Got the windmill,
I
and
can't
now
do
you've
it.
Got the Gabba.
I don't have the Gabba.
Hey, back in my day, we were doing the Macarena.
Macarena.
Yeah. Nutbush.
What was it? YMCA.
You've probably
that
seen
was
a few
your,
of those.
Wasn't the YMCA.
Oh, yeah. That's a classic. Yeah. What, you don't know that? Agadoo?
Nah, it's a Gabba, mate. It's the Western Sydney, you know, lads got the hat on backwards, doing the dance. I don't know, mate. Look it up. Look it up, you old bastard. You should know what it is.
Okay.
Anyway, moving on. Big year. A lot of changes came into effect. Mm. Obviously, the interest rates played a big part in the market this year. So it knocked a lot of confidence as, you know, was part and parcel of what they were trying to achieve. There's some massive raises with the half percenters. There was a few of those getting thrown around, more than a few if you can count. But it was big, man, and there were some big numbers across the board in terms of capital city price declines.
Correct.
But interestingly, a lot of capital cities still showing price growth, which was good to see.
Correct. Overall for the annual, you mean?
Overall for the annual, yep. Yeah. So it was interesting, man, because like you see And I know, like, you pulled up some numbers. You wanted me to read through some numbers. Some big cities, big players. You know, your Sydney and Melbourne's down across the board, both of them down. You know, obviously Sydney down 10.6% for the year, being exact. Melbourne, 7% down. That's a big drop between the two of them. And the interesting thing is what's the mortgage stress going to be like for next year? With a lot of people, you know, who had fixed rates. I know there's a lot of people getting fixed rates at the 1.99s, a lot of people getting fixed rates in the twos, low twos for owner occupiers. How are those people going to be able to handle and take it when, you know, the debt level is still the same, but they're going to be rolling off onto P&Is into that sort of territory?
What do you think is going to happen?
Mate, I think there could be a bit of blood on the streets. I've called it the last couple of months. I think there could be a bit of blood on the streets. I know a lot of people did put money away, but you know, some of those big cities, there's quite a lot of mortgage stress around as it is. And I think when those times come to fruition, those people roll off those fixed rates. I do think there's going to be a bit of blood on the streets. I do think there'll be people trying to get out of there. Yeah, man, but there is also, I don't think it's going to be, you know, a huge crash or a huge drop or anything, because there are also a lot of people that that didn't buy during the periods, and there is a big supply shortage at the moment as well. Not enough homes are being built. You know, even land development and whatnot is quite slow coming to market as well. So there is that is going to hold a bit of a floor under the market. But even that being said, supply and demand can do so much, but ultimately, if something is overpriced and in a way overinflated, it will come back a bit when these guys need to sell and sell in a hurry. So I feel like there's going to be a few markets with a bit of blood on the streets next year. I do think it'll bottom out. I don't think it's going to crash. But there are going to be some other good markets that are going to keep rising as well. There's a couple of the smaller capitals are still doing quite well. You know, confidence has obviously taken a hit, but I think when the interest rates and the current interest rate cycle, you know, comes to a peak, which I think we are very close to, and I think the inflationary numbers that come out next year, it's going to be very, very interesting. And I think that in itself will tell a story as to how much further they go with interest rates. I don't think we're too far from the peak. And I think, again, yeah, I'm not going to call until we hear next year's inflation numbers and how they kind of come out. But yeah, man, interesting.
What's your take on some commentators are saying that, yes, interest rates are obviously going to increase. However, in terms of discretionary or family spending, a lot of other things will go before hemorrhaging on your home.
Yeah, definitely.
So tightening up the belt with discretionary spending, holidays and all that sort of stuff before you would take a massive hit on the home, which will give a bit of a buffer and protection against what people are expecting, blood on the streets.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So mate, it will always, people always save themselves as much as they can with it, but there's always going to be those that can't help themselves as well. So I think it'll be a mix, and that's why I don't think the market will crash and crumble, that combined with obviously the supply and demand imbalance that's out there as well. But you know, during the rate cut cycle that happened over the last few years, especially during COVID, trying to stimulate the economy, keep things ticking over, APRA raised the basis buffer that lenders had to use to 300 basis points to 3%.
Can you just explain that to people who are very novice, what that actually means?
Okay, so let's say you go and get an interest rate at 2%, right? The APRA, like previously it was sitting at either 2 or 2.5%, depending on the lenders. They increased that buffer rate to 3%. Okay, the buffer rate is affordability stress test. So if you can afford it you go out and buy it at 2%, those times are not going to last forever, right? Definitely not. It was record low interest rates. It was never going to last forever. Hence why they raised it, so that people would be able to actually handle that when it happened, which it has happened this year, literally 8 consecutive raises, which has taken it to the full 300 basis points that they factored in as a buffer. So it's a stress test. You have to be able to survive the stress test if rates went that high for them to be able to lend you the money. And I think it was reasonably prudent that they did it as well. It impacted serviceability at the time, but it also kind of safeguarded you know, a lot of people not actually being able to afford home loans and interest rates where they have gotten back to now, so which is kind of close-ish to the long-term averages. So it's an interesting time, man. And I think the interesting thing is also going to be watching APRA next year and what they do, because there's a lot of chit-chat around whether they actually reduce that buffer rate. And because interest rates are now getting towards a peak, are they now going to start and chop that back? And if they do chop that back, people who can afford to buy, it's actually going to increase serviceability and allow people to get back into the market.
Now, when we're looking at investors and a lot of our audience, they're not going to be looking to, like when we say blood on the streets, we're looking at people that have obviously over-leveraged at a really significant price point, would you say? more so in terms of that?
Again, like we spoke about in the last episode, man, it's yes, the top end of the market is always the most volatile and the most exposed. Mm. You know, if people are caught out at the top, people, when times get tough, you don't trade up, right? You don't go, oh, things are getting really hard. Instead of paying, you know, $3 million for a player, I'm going to go pay $4 million. You know, they don't trade up. If anything, they trade down. And so, yeah, the top end of the market always does feel it the most. Always, mate. But it's always relevant. And it's always relative to the individual, because when you're going out and buying in an area, they're stress testing you on what you're looking to buy. So someone making $100,000 might go out and buy a $700,000-$800,000 house, whereas someone making, you know, three times as much might go out and buy something for three times as much. So the actual affordability rate is the same in that scenario.
Gotcha. So obviously we're looking at where the market has been the last year. Interest rates, you feel that are coming towards a bit of a peak. Hopefully inflation is going to start diminishing. That'll give a bit more confidence in the market, would we say? We still feel a bit of blood on the streets. Mm. However, looking at the price point that investors should be targeting and who you advocate,
yes,
where do you see for those kind of people?
Yes.
What should they be looking out for?
In terms of like the things to look for to invest in?
Yeah, like what you know, because everyone's thinking about next year, 2023, what's going to happen? Yeah. We know what's happened 2022.
Well, I think that's actually a great point that you make there, because it's like, it's, you know, you're talking about the affordability and where people should be putting their money. And it's like, you look at those big cities, like your Sydneys and your Melbournes and those different cities that have had great runs. Even Brisbane, to an extent, had a great run the past 2 years. You look at those growth rates you put up on my screen, and like, a lot of those smaller capitals actually still posted quite good gains this year. You know, in a time where interest rates went up by 3%, man, that is huge. They got 3% and yet they still post gains and still post a positive result. That's massive. And so, like, I think it shows the strength and it shows the resilience of the more affordable parts of the market and those sorts of price points, those housing markets. The more affordable and the higher interest rate environments, the better that they're going to perform. Obviously, combined with a lot of the other factors, not just being affordable isn't the pure reason that you're going to have growth. But yeah, man, I feel like, you know, those markets are going to have the better potential if you're combining all the other stuff with it for that continued growth.
When you're looking at Adelaide there, the annual growth, 13.4%, as a bit of an outlier compared to those from an annual basis. Mm. What's your thoughts on that?
So Adelaide was continuing a very strong run, extremely tight housing market, very, very tight land supply. They're more about infill than they are about greenfield sort of development. So you look at like a city like Melbourne, they just keep building out and out and out. They do infill, but like Adelaide is a very pro infill capital city. And so like it keeps the supply lines very, very tight. There's also huge kind of shifts happening down there. You know, moving a lot towards tech hubs, they're winning a lot of projects, they're leaving a lot of like livability awards as well. It's also, you know, during times like Sydney and Melbourne were in hectic lockdowns and whatnot as well. It was another city that actually did reasonably well and held out okay during lockdowns too. So yeah, man, it's a big, big, you know, kind of affordability factor again was another reason that kind of drove a city like that too. Plus all the other, you know, all the other good stuff on top with a city like Adelaide. We were quite bullish there, especially in kind of 2019, 2020. We bought up a lot of stock through obviously the Australian Property Scout Buyers Agency. We bought up a lot of stock in 2019, 2020. And obviously, like you look at, they had two exceptional years up to this year. And even this year, you know, posting 13.4% in a year where, you know, a lot of other capital cities went back big time. You look at the difference, right? Perth compared to Sydney, 13.4 up compared to 10.6% down. You literally, as a turnaround there, you're 24% in front owning a property in Adelaide this year as an average compared to owning something in Sydney.
Mm.
24%.
It's incredible.
That's massive.
And when you look at, you know, last episode we spoke about one of your hot tips for Christmas.
Well, yeah.
Was we did speak about, you know, certain markets not having a short view on a market and seeing if it's got more room to grow. Mm-hmm. When someone like you would look at Adelaide, for example, now, we're looking at 13.4%, would that say to you, because it's had a pretty strong run considering all the other capital cities, is that a market that you would say, you know what, maybe it's probably not a time to get in there because it's continued to be strong in 2022?
It really depends. So when it comes to a city like that, it's not just the past 12 months you look at. So I'm always very much about like the last, you know, yes, the past 12 months, but the last like 3 years, 5 years, 10 years on average annual growth rates as well. Like, how is that city looking from that perspective? But even from that front, what else is driving the market? You know, where is affordability sitting in those markets as well? What are rents doing? What's the population growth? And it's also like you're looking at it from a capital city perspective, whereas I would more be looking at it down into a micro level in terms of a council and a suburb level. Because like you look at some of those other cities there as well. Like I look at Perth, and Brizzy as well. But let's say we're talking about Perth, you know, across the city, as an average annual growth rate, I see it sitting at 3.9%. I know for a fact most of the stuff that we bought at the start of this year in Perth has seen between 20 to 30% growth. So your city is sitting at 3.9%, but isolated markets within those cities have seen 20 to 30%. So it comes back to exactly the same thing for Adelaide. I mean, you're looking at it from too much of a macro level, of a big picture level. Yes, it's an extreme positive that the city has done really well, but you need to really drill down to councils and to suburb level to make a call on that decision, make a decision on that.
Which is perfect, because that's exactly what I was hoping you were going to say. Because
occasionally get called there, but I thank you, mate. It's good to know you
for our audience, it just goes to show you to just be wary about these kind of stats because a lot of people will be looking at this at the end of the year, looking at the overall picture from a city, but not really diving a lot deeper into location, council.
You know what the other huge thing is? Sorry, Matt, I didn't mean to cut you off, but like people will be looking at this and as an average annual growth rate across the national, and this is where the media comes in and they grab it and they, bull shark sexy. Coming in on town. Well, it's not so much sexy to be down by 3.2% across. That's not too sexy.
Fear, you know, it gets the headlines.
Yeah, I know, I'm joking. But like they're down as a national across the country. Nationally, we're down 3.2%. Quarterly, we're down 3.5%. You know, I'm not normally like running into all these figures is not normally what I would do on, say, a podcast. But it's funny because it's down that, and that's what the media are pumping out there. You know, and like I was saying, man, you're literally down over 12 months, 3.2%. We have had clients that are up 20 to 30% on the year, let alone the discount we got them on the way in as well. A lot of those guys are up a massive percentage, but the headlines are reading negative because across the country, the two biggest cities are in steady decline. They've had a heavy decline, and that has affected the national average. And then, you know, you get these negative headlines. Man, if you didn't buy at the start of the year just because of different things going
the fear,
man, you could have missed out on some huge opportunities, some huge growth out there. I think that's a massive lesson. And that's why, I'm always a big advocate of be very wary and be very careful of where you're getting your information from. Because, you tap yourself out. It's the same as in 12 months, there's a massive chance if Sydney and Melbourne do have another decent price fall, there's another massive chance you see those similar numbers. The market could be down, it could be neutral, it could be down 3%, it could be down 5% nationally. But, you know, are you going to be up 20, 30, 40% on the markets that you actually bought into? Because I guarantee you there will be cities, there'll be regional markets, there'll be suburbs in cities, all the rest of it next year that will do another 20 to 30%. I guarantee you that. It goes back to not just, this market is a proven performer. It grows every year, blah, blah, blah. Bullshit. Never happens. Never, ever happens. Time your markets, time your cycles, buy into the right markets at the right time, recycle your money out into different markets at the right time, make your money in the markets that are growing. You know, and I think that's the biggest lesson I think I can, you know, try and pass on here. And this tip that as you're talking about is, I mean, looking at the media headlines, look from a macro level, where is going to keep performing into 2023?
I think you brought up a good point there again. You're doing really well on this podcast, by the way.
Thanks, mate.
Because
leave a review if you're loving it, please. I need to keep my job. Because so does Jimmy.
People at the start of the year, as you said, might have been sitting on the sidelines waiting for an opportunity and missed that 20-30%. Yes. And they would justify by looking at these stats going, see, the prices are down.
Yeah.
However, coming up to 2023,
yes,
you do not want to be making that mistake again.
Definitely not. Definitely not. Mate, there's going to be markets that will have big gains, again, like I said, and then there'll be markets that will bottom out and there could be some exceptional opportunities in good, strong markets that are bottoming out. But yeah, man, there's always opportunities. It's going back to the market of not the dartboard or the the, you know, this area guaranteed because of the last average annual growth rate. It's not. It's being sophisticated, investing in the right locations at the right money for the right reasons, and then riding that wave of growth. Because you can always, you know me, man, I'm a massive advocate of making discounts on the way in, but making discount on the way in is a moot point if you're buying in the wrong market.
Correct.
You buy in the right market, compounds that growth, compounds your run, and yeah, man, set you off in a very, very big way.
Okay. So you've heard it here, folks. Sammy, the bull shark Gordon.
I was going to say bullshit then.
Well, some would say that. But he's very bullish very for bullish. 2023.
Always, mate.
Get in.
There's always places to make money.
And any particular cities? Are we giving away your secret herbs and spices?
There's plenty of particular cities. Yes. Yes.
Jeez.
Moving on.
He's a bit like Colonel Sanders. He doesn't want to give away the secret herbs and spices.
Amen. Would you give away your secret recipe to
kebab?
The chili kebab? It's kebab plus chili.
But it's what you do with it. That's what you do.
What with the chili?
So, okay. So I think that's helped people because we don't want to spend too much time on this. But
yes.
Obviously, everyone's been, unless you've been under a rock, you've realized that interest rates.
Have you been under a rock? Your face is a bit flat today.
Well, I feel a little bit. I had a big Christmas. I ate way too much.
Yes, I can tell.
Too much kofta and some
baklava.
But I'm feeling fresh. I'm ready. I'm going to get into shape next year.
Okay.
Better shape.
Okay. Yeah,
I suggest you might consider that.
I'm pretty good. But thank you.
Also, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about. Is there anything else about the market you want to talk about?
Man, I think it's been a great year. It's been a great year. A lot of people are looking at it in a very negative light. It's been a great year, man. I've loved it.
Great. Here
we go. Had some massive wins. Beautiful.
Well, what I'd like to do now, if you don't mind, is redirect it to, I know with Scouting Australia, we're keeping a pretty broad spectrum of what we talk about and stuff. But a lot of people know you from Australian Property Scout and the business and what you've actually done.
Yes.
And I thought it'd be good. It's only good to just recap the year from a personal perspective for yourself and also from the business perspective, just to give people a bit of a snapshot. People love listening to the podcast from you about your journey and your story. And obviously it's evolved. So let's, if you don't mind, can we dive into some of the numbers from yourself? Like, how have you found this year, 2022, from a business perspective?
Yep. You've
brought on a lot of people. How do you feel from your own perspective the business has gone?
Mate, great. It's been a very interesting year. We ran it extremely lean up until the end of last year. And I kind of had to make the decision, do we look to bring some extra people on to help service, the people I'd like to help? And so I made the decision to bring in some additional buyer's agents and train them up, personally. So a lot of time went into that. And I actually loved it, man. Giving all my experience as much as I could over and tweaking and finessing and kind of going from that end. And mate, I feel like the end of this year, I should be getting a value certificate up on my wall from the amount of deals that I've crunched and whatnot that we've put together. It's been an amazing year, man. It's been crazy. Brought in the project management division and department as well, which was really cool. So I always managed that pretty well the whole way up for pretty well 4 years now. I've always managed renovations, builds. Man, it was time to bring in a professional with the records as well on that stuff too. So very excited to have brought in and on the renovation department too. And that's cool, man, because I've always been a big advocate, and I know you spoke about it in the last ep, the lift and build under that we did on your project and all the different renovation strategies and layering that we've done and that I've advocated for a long time, you've trusted me with. Man, it can be extremely powerful stuff. So having someone else who can really drive that end of it, and I still work very closely within the department as well. But yeah, man, that's been an amazing thing to bring in also.
And just on that, I think just to reinforce for people out there about, the renovation or project management side, when we are, and correct me if I'm wrong, from Australian Property Scout, but when you're trying to layer on as many different strategies as you can to really exhaust and squeeze every bit of drop out of a property, that kind of renovation or project management is a big key difference of what Australian Property Scout does.
Yes.
Compared to
that's a good point.
Some other, because I've noticed, especially in my past as a client, you would speak to someone that'd say, yeah, you can do this.
But they never drive it.
No, they won't execute the outcome.
Yeah.
So the project management is actually helping you get that cash flow yield. Because let's face it, we're either trying to get an equity uplift or we're trying to get a higher yield.
Or a combination.
But you're not going to achieve it unless you execute it. And if you're not buying where you live, how are you going
to
do it?
And executing it to a high level.
Exactly.
For a cost-effective solution.
Yes.
So that was the whole reason I brought it in. That was the gap that I saw a while ago. And it was just something like I wanted to help people with it because it was something that no one else was doing, and it was wrong to buy a property for someone, in my opinion, and then just leave it with them to try and figure it out themselves. They're going to get ripped off. They're going to pay, or they're going to have to go put the time. And if they wanted to go and put the time and effort and energy into it and everything themselves, that's completely fine. But there's a huge amount of people that wanted the results but didn't know how to execute. Mm. So that's why I started running it for people and kind of taking it on from that front too. And man, the results have been epic. Like you saw, you know, firsthand what we were able to create within your portfolio as well. So yeah, man, it was it's awesome. Yeah, I love it. It's a great division. I've done so much building, renovating, you know, small little developments and whatnot as well on existing properties and fresh blocks and all the rest of it as well. Man, there's so much value that can be created out of it and cash flow and equity gains.
So important. Yeah. I was just thinking for people listening out there that have maybe bought a property on their own a few years ago or something, and they're thinking, you know, I wonder what I could do to this place.
Mm.
I mean, the project management division, do they help clients?
Oh, it does really depend where they are. So typically we try and work with the existing clients with what they've got in or like with what we've helped source for people as well. Because I don't run it at like a profit or anything. We literally run it's a break even sort of add-on service that we do within our business that we help our clients with. There's so much value you can gain out of it, but like, yeah, it's literally we charged a little extra for awesome. It. It's not really, sorry.
Sorry about that. Sorry.
False start on that one.
But that is a great initiative. And the two highest performing properties in my portfolio have all been a direct result of doing some significant changes, uplift. And yeah, if you're
layering strategies, man.
I love the layering strategies.
Yeah, it's huge.
You might as well, it's like a burger. Don't just get the patty and the cheese.
Who wants a plain burger?
You might as well have the pineapple,
the bacon.
Beetroot. Are you a beetroot burger?
I'm not a beetroot man. I'm an Aussie. I'm surprised you like it.
No, I wouldn't put it in my burger. Okay. I thought you would because that's a typical, you know, the fish and chip shop burger. Yeah, it's got everything.
Yeah. I'm the weird one in my family. I never ate it. Always frisbeed it at someone.
And that's why he's moved away from the family, folks. That's why he's up in the Gold Coast.
I'm a professional frisbee player. Got extremely
found his
good
passion from the beetroot. So apart from bringing in the project management team, I'm curious about the numbers because I know at the end of the year, looking back, how many deals roughly do you think Australian Properties get?
Matt, I actually worked it out because you say roughly, mate. You asked me to get some numbers for you on this before you jumped on. So I came in prepared. Man, it was a great year in terms of what we kind of built on compared to last year. Obviously having the extra, you know, feet on the ground, boots on the ground, creating relationships in different areas. We're able to lift up the number of deals that we did this year as well. I mean, we did 354 as a total deals across the board.
Wow.
Which was amazing. That's
awesome.
That's a lot of people we were able to help, which is awesome. It was 232 for an exact number in terms of bread and butter growth deals that we executed.
Nice.
Average discount on the way into each deal was a little over $28,000 as an average discount per deal.
Now, when we're talking about that, just quickly, saying the average discount, they're like, what are you talking about? How'd you get it?
Okay, so let's say the deal was, for an easy number, $428,000 was his market value.
Market value. So what you saw listed on realestate.com or
So that's like a list price, right? But in terms of what we actually could physically prove in terms of comparable sold listings on market, what we could see was worth, not what was listed at, what it was worth, let's say 428 just for an easy number, and then picked it up for say 400 just to show the average discount. The important thing to note though is obviously, you know, we help any and all investors from a lot of different price points. We've got markets down in the low 200s up to, you know, we buy up to $600,000-$700,000 as well, right? We have a big spread. We always find typically as well, you kind of find when you start going over 30 grand, it's harder to get, especially on the more expensive properties. But then even on the lower end properties as well, that's such a big discount in terms of purchase price for what we're chasing too. So, man, I think that's an amazing, amazing result to be able to source that as well. Because all these markets, good to remember as well, these are markets that were growing this year too. These weren't in declining markets. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I made 28 grand on the way in and then the market went down 50 in the next 6 months. It wasn't that, right? So we made, you know, 28 as an average on the way in, and majority of our markets across the board saw between 20, like I said to you, 20 to 30% growth rates. And I actually did work it out and we're just over 26%. If we're working out kind of roughly, we have trackers and whatnot within our systems, it was just over 26% on actual market value. So not even including the discount on the way in, 26% in terms of a growth rate across a year, which is...
That is phenomenal. That is very impressive cool numbers. Results, it's pretty hard to argue with that.
Yep.
And it just shows you the when we're talking about layering strategies, but if you're looking at that compounding effect of getting a discount and then getting that growth,
yep,
it's no wonder that in 6 to 12 months' time, you're going to be in a position to be able to go again.
Go again, yeah.
And we know that you're not going to get wealthy off one deal. Yes. It's not going to change your life unless you're prepared to wait 30 years or even then.
It's only so much you can milk out of one property, you know. So that's why, it's always about – and we'll go into this. We have been talking about doing a potty on, you know, how do you build towards these different goals. You know, the Triple S Pulsar strategy sessions with Sam. How do we get people to these different goals in different scenarios? And we'll work through that next year as well. But yeah, man, you need more than one deal to be able to do this. And obviously these sorts of properties with those sorts of numbers. Man, if you go on Australian Property Scout, right, the socials, go on Insta, there's all the safe stories on there and it's client wins. Go hit the client wins, man. Go read the reviews on there. There's probably a few of yours in there. But like when clients text me, great results that they've had, you know, we picked the deal up 28,000 below market and then they've gone and valued it 3-6 months later and they're up 50, 60, 70,000. We've had some guys up. No, I remember there was one that was 95 grand in like a 4-month window post settlement. It's just, man, just some insane results in terms of what we're actually able to achieve and sort for clients as well. So
how does that make you feel? I mean, this is obviously your business and it's your passion, but seeing, I know, you know, there's a lot of numbers there and deals. There's a lot of deals.
Yep.
But when you see things like that, how does it really make you feel?
I love it, man. There's nothing better. I get the goosebump moment, like when people text me and I see the big wins, you know what I mean? Like I love it. You see the big wins and there's only so much I can get in terms of win out of my own portfolio when I do my own deals. There's you know, I get a bit from it, but when you get these other guys, anyone, doesn't matter where they're starting from in life, and they're doing a first deal and you know, you tell them it's got 28, 30 grand, whatever that's in it. But when they actually realize and they get their bank value, and it comes back and they're like, holy shit, man, there's $61,000, you know, equity uplift, you know, 3, 4, 6 months post-settlement. Mate, that's a pretty empowering moment and text to get stuff like that or phone call to get stuff like that as well. It's I love it, man. It's beautiful.
Which is interesting because when you do a deal on your own, and we'll talk about some of them from a personal journey, that you probably – do you have that same feeling still?
Not really. I haven't for quite a while. I think I've told you this before. Like when I do deals, a lot of the time the deals that I do, because I still kind of pick up in any one year, I might pick up 6, 8, 10 properties in a year. Right? I got a big portfolio, snowballs. When you get a big portfolio, snowballs, your cash flow snowball, your equity based snowballs. Especially you're buying in the right markets, right? That are doing the right amounts of growth. Man, a lot of the time the properties I buy are just like, I buy the old shitters that everyone's turned down. They don't want to touch the reno's too big. And I'm just like, or it's a bit of a liability to give a deal like that to a client. So instead of passing it to a client or whatever, I'll buy it and execute the renovation and development myself. So much of what I acquire is that stuff. Man, it's all numbers for me. Like I've the little bit of excitement that I get has kind of gone from doing those sorts of deals. And I also know it's going to be a little bit of a headache to have to do those renos as well.
You're already preempting the pain in the ass thing you're going to have to deal with. You know, it's funny you should mention that because I don't know if I've ever told you, but Sam's partner, Morgan, when I spoke to Morgs one time and she was talking about you and you'd just done a deal. I think you just settled on a deal.
Yeah, yeah.
And she said, so did you settle on this deal? And you went, yeah, and then you just were doing something else. She said, well, Aren't you going to get excited about this deal? And you're like, well, yeah, I'm excited. She goes, well, you don't look excited. But once the numbers start building up, and obviously you're not taking it for granted, but
of course.
I can see when it lights you up when you're helping young investors.
Oh, honestly, you get so much more from, this is the young man, it's everyone. Like you're old, like when I help you.
Oh, walked into that one.
Oh, yeah. That was a headbutt straight into the beam, the cross beam.
That was
wow. But honestly.
You jumped on that. That's how.
Thank you.
Anyway, you're welcome.
Yeah, no worries. Man, this is like when people come to you with goals and like you're moving that needle for them and you're getting them to that next deal and it's the first, the second, the third property in the journey that you're chasing and that you're going towards. Mate, nothing beats that. You know, it's just like, man, Morgs has told you that story. You know, she's had it to happen with me multiple times. She'll come in and she'll say it because she sees the settlement, you know, confirmation whoever comes through.
She has to remind you.
Yeah, or she'll call me and the settlement agent will call me twice and I won't answer it. And she'll call her and she'll see I'm alive. It's like, yeah, he's working. She's like, oh, well, he settled. And I was like, oh, yeah, cool. So she'll come and tell me and, yeah, man, thanks.
Now, part of it. Back to the numbers because we've got to wrap this up. We said a short episode. Man. What about cash flow? Did we talk about that?
No, we haven't yet. So 122 cash flow deals for the calendar year. We averaged 11,924 deals per annum. It's funny, I had this thing at like
$11,000. Did you?
$11,924 per annum net passive as an average across the board for executed cash flow deals. It's actually interesting to note that because I remember last year, I think I was up more around like 16,000 as an average. obviously some deals produce more than others, right, in terms of how much it costs to do as well. But the net cash flows obviously dropped this year due to those interest rate increases. So where, you know, last year a particular deal might have been producing 15, 16, it might be down to 8 or 9, which is still a great result in a current market, with current interest rates and whatnot. But then, you know, other deals that maybe 20, 25 are down into the mid-teens as well, in terms of net passive, right, $1,000 per annum net passive. So yeah, it's very interesting to note across the board with those. More and more people with interest rate increases, funnily enough as well, are wanting to do deals like that too. So they're obviously finding a little bit of mortgage stress across the board, or preempting potential mortgage stress of next year, next couple of years. So they're building those sorts of deals in, or they're seeing the light bulb moment of shit. I see what happens when all you do is acquire growth assets. You need to start building some of these cash flow deals in as well. So it's been a great little drive towards those style of assets now as well, which has been cool, man, which has been really cool. And even like, you know, some of these regional areas, mate, you got these which we don't classify these as cash flow deals, but you know, these young fellas that come through and they need the cash flow to keep moving forward. You go by saying in the mid 200s or high 200s, that has got, you know, producing very strong rents and you know, sitting 8%, 8.5% yield on purchase. And that sort of stuff, that's insane, man. Mm. So they're not cash flow deals. They're just bread and butters, but it's just cool to see the numbers that run through from that stuff as well.
Great. So it seems like it's been a pretty successful year from Australian Property Scout. A lot of investment in the business as well from your end.
One other thing as well, just on that, it's a funny thing too. Sorry, just popped into my head. Didn't mean to cut you off. But it's very interesting to note and to watch the rental increases going across the portfolios at the moment too. So like a lot of deals that are getting sent out, like I was saying, like maybe let's say a deal came out at 11,900. The annual growth rates in terms of rent at the moment too has been massive. So a lot of the areas we're investing in as well, we've seen 20 to 30% increases per year, and some of them for the last this year and last year in terms of rental growth, which has been epic to see. So you know, I know a lot of people are quite worried about the inflation thing. It's driven different things like the interest rates and whatnot. But at some point, the interest rates will come back, and the inflation numbers will have dropped back. But the way I've always experienced it, unless you're in some little mining town out in the middle of nowhere, a lot of the time, once the rents get to a certain point, they don't really recede. You know, they typically hold firm at those sorts of values. So I think it's going to be very interesting to watch as these interest rates go up, and at some point they'll come back down, and to see the rents still sit at that high number, which will obviously increase those net cash flows.
Yes, which is obviously going to help your portfolio. And you did touch on the dual asset, which the growth
and
cash flow. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be a big focus.
That's a potty in itself.
On a podcast. So for everyone out there, because you've heard Sam talk about these high growth deals and the high cash flow deals and how they work together and a very clear strategy, which has been the cornerstone of your own success, it's fair to say, the dual asset accumulation. What does that actually mean? Because I know people on a higher level, they understand it, but how does it actually work together is what we need to tackle for people.
And we will do that in a future podcast, right? You're asking now?
No, I was going to say, man,
we're going to run out of time if I jump into that now.
Just planting the seed, giving a little bit of a teaser out there.
The dual asset accumulation.
If you want to know more about the dual asset accumulation, then please write in. Let us know.
Let us know. Do you actually want to hear it, or are we just going to be talking to ourselves and no one's going to listen to it? If you want to hear it, write in, let us know. Maybe mention it in the review that you're going to leave when you finish listening to this podcast. What do you reckon?
I think so. Well, this is the final podcast of the year, Sammy boy.
It is, mate. I've got a couple of final things, man. Asked me to write all these numbers down.
Oh, you got more numbers.
There was a funny one. This year, I tracked the number of off-market deals rejected. As many as we could. There would be a lot more than what I probably tracked, I reckon. But man, we averaged out 211 rejected deals per month off market, not even on markets. I'm talking purely off market deals rejected because they did not meet the APS stamp of approval, which amounted to 2,532 deals for the year. Off market rejections. How many off market rejections have you had? I would say Tinder would be classified as off market. You're not at a bar. There'd be a lot in the bar, but off market Tinder rejections. Your number would probably be pretty close to that this year as well.
It was pretty hard to track.
Pretty big. Wouldn't fit in an Excel spreadsheet.
No, I couldn't track it. You know the AAA in the Excel spreadsheet.
It's like when you put in the calculator in iPhone, you go a certain amount of thousand
error.
Time thousand.
It says
it's
error.
Just one error, phone just bursts into flames.
It says error. So, but that is interesting. Can I just make a point about that? Because as a buyer's agent.
Yes.
Just cutting off there perfectly. As a buyer's agent, people obviously understand that the business makes money as a fee for service.
Yes.
So it is in your interest,
on
a very base level, to get people into more deals.
Yeah.
some people out there might be thinking, you know, why don't you just buy those? If you were to give some of those deals, why do you reject so many deals? I suppose is what I'm really getting at is people out there thinking, nah, I'm sure they just give deals that I don't think are 100%.
Yeah. I've told the story. Have I told the story yet?
Don't know.
I think
you tell a lot of stories.
I know I tell a lot of stories. You tell a lot too, so it convolutes the quality, you know, dilutes the quality that is told.
We'll judge this one on you.
But what happened with me, which I'll get to, I don't think I have told this story yet because it's what we're getting into in that following podcast. So we've got 3 to 6 to come in terms of my personal portfolio. Yes. And I think it's after that one, which will be 7 and beyond, when I got burnt by a buyer's agent. There was just volume business, volume game. That's the whole reason I started this. So I got burnt by a BA back in the day, back in 2015, 2016, something like that. It was the whole premise, the whole reason I became a buyer's agent. I literally live by the same mantra. And I started because I remember swearing to myself, I would never do what he had done to me, to someone else. So most people would look at the deals that we pass on or that are very close and they'd go, surely, man, you just do that deal. But like we have a standard that we kind of stick to, right? A standard that I am very, very diligent with, because you need to make a certain amount of money in order to deal, and you need to be in the right market to be able to continue to do deals. Like the amount of agents that have come back to me in Sydney this year and Brisbane the end of this year and all the rest of it trying to sell me deals and that. Let's say deal is an absolute steal in say Brisbane or something like that. But Sydney especially, I want to touch the markets. Because I'm not going to do what I needed to do. And yes, on paper, I could show as a deal there for 50 grand more. But it's like I was saying to you, you buy a deal for 500, it's worth 550, but the market comes back another 20% next year, which I don't think it will, but it could potentially. I think it could come back potentially with this year, 10% again. And you've bought the deal, it's come back to market value, and then don't do anything for another 5-10 years. Like what's the actual point of purchasing that property? So like there is so much that comes into it in terms of what gets turned down in terms of deals. It's not as simple and as clear cut, and there's so many different things there that equate to what is a deal and what isn't a deal. And a lot of those properties were brought to us off market at market value or slightly below market value. But I have a set criteria I like to stick to and that I really work towards. That we focus on. If it doesn't meet it, man, it doesn't meet it. Like we're not in, like I don't work this as a volume game business. And I think a huge amount of people appreciate that that's the way I run it, because it gets you into your next deal that much quicker if you buy the right property at the right price in the right location, blah, blah, blah. That gets you into your next property quicker.
Well, one of the tips you said last for the Christmas special was don't cut off your nose to spite your face. Mm. And in essence, that would be if you got someone into the wrong deal and they couldn't do anything like what I did for 5 years, how does that help you? Like it doesn't help you. Because that buyer's agent actually, for me, called me up 6 months later and said, are you ready to go again? I said, dude, that hasn't done anything. And he goes, don't you have any more cash?
Oh, wow.
It's like, what are you talking about? So he cut off his nose to spite his face because he
And that's why we look at it, man. If we keep helping clients win and they keep winning and having great success and great, you know, great success and be able to keep moving forward, everyone is winning. And that's why I'm so committed to helping everyone win, because it keeps everything moving, the whole ecosystem happy. And that's what I kind of live and die by is the quality of what we do, what we produce in terms of deals.
Well, I love that, Tammy. What a way to finish off. I think that is, I like that, helping everyone win. Anything else you want to say before we wrap this on? I know you got a few things to say beforehand, but...
Mate, the only final things, I think some great wins for APS this year, obviously as a business, Australian Property Scout, coming in 33rd, in the AFR, Australian Financial Review's Fast Starters Company. That was a pretty humbling moment. It was extremely proud to win that as well. I know a lot of clients were really happy for us to have hit that when we still have such strict deal crunching criteria. I think I amazed myself that we actually hit it based on that as well. So that was pretty sick. Earlier in the year, obviously, you know, runners up for buyer's agent and buyer's agency of the year too. Odds on winners, I think, for next year. Just throwing it out there.
if anyone's listening.
We'll have a good crack at that. But that's for buyer's agent and buyer's agency of the year, which is pretty awesome.
I know we glazed that. You just swept over that Australian Financial Review Fastest 100.
Yes, Jimmy.
That's a pretty impressive thing. I mean, how did that make you, honestly, you know, the boy from the farm.
From the farm to
the fastest 100.
Fastest 100. That's a good.
It's pretty impressive, mate.
Is that a book? I don't know. Yeah, thank you, man. No, I appreciate it. It was humbling. It was a very proud moment for both myself and the team and what we've kind of come and achieved too. It was amazing. I was very happy.
Well done, mate.
Thank you, man.
You should be proud of yourself for this year.
And launching Scouting Australia podcast.
Yes.
But the only way we're going to know if it's a success is if people write in, leave a review, give us 5 stars. Tell us what you really think. Please.
Maybe not what you really
think. Yes. What you really think, because I need a reason to boot this bloke off the podcast. we're very thankful, guys, to for you all listening in. I hope you're enjoying it. I hope you're getting good content. I hope you're having an occasional laugh or two at the expense of Jimmy. And I also hope you have a great round out to the end of the year. A great
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year's. Merry Christmas. Everything.
Everything. We're going to hit next year running with setting some very clear goals. I think the first episode, if you don't mind me saying, is getting super clear on what your 2023 focus is.
Yep.
You happy with that?
Yeah, I think that's a good one, man. Bit of goal setting. Bit of goal setting for 2023. Absolutely. How to craft it out.
Absolutely.
Bit of Triple S Pulsars coming out soon.
Get the Pulsar sessions out.
It'll be going good.
All right, well, it's been a good year.
Jimmy, thank you, mate. I appreciate you joining us again. Tommy, mate, happy New Year's to you as well, my good friend.
Tommy Gunn.
That's it.
That's it.
Have a great New Year's, everyone. I'll see you next year.